You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for October 28th, 2016. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the political funeral of Newt Gingrich, which will be followed immediately by the triumphant political resurrection of Newt Gingrich, it's the Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
As our friend Batocchio once said, the guy's freaking Voldemort.
He is. Except there's so many Voldemorts now, it's hard to keep track of which one's the real Voldemort.
That is true.
In case we have some listeners, by the way, this is our 360th episode in a row. So that would be Professional F360.
Anderson Cooper, eat your heart out.
Exactly. We're tentatively entitling this You Turn Me Right Round, Baby.
Yes, in honor of Dead or Alive. The lead singer of Dead or Alive passed away this week.
Indeed. So it's all coming together.
We're circling. I would like to start the podcast with a letter that we received. And I'm reading this because this particular person said in a very succinct way what lots and lots of people have written to me this week. So okay. I'm just going to read this real quick.
Just so you know, I have not seen this letter.
No, and so it has nothing to do with you. So,
well, obviously that can't be true because it's all about me. But if it contains any embarrassing personal revelations or pop quizzes, I'm going to say no. I'm not gonna play. But other than that, rock my world,
rock
baby.
Your world. Here we go. It is from KG in Philadelphia, and she writes, "Hi, Fran / Blue Gal. I just wanted to send you, your mom and sister, and the rest of your wonderful family an armful of support and love from Philadelphia. I hope your sister and mom receive the best possible treatments and are on their way to complete and speedy recoveries as soon as possible. As we Quakers do, I'm holding you all in the light. Recently, I've also had two family members deal with cancer. My dad and my partner's grandfather, both of them successfully. The slog through the disease was dreadful, but they're both still here, and I'm grateful for every single second I have with them. I'm sending best wishes to Junior Dude, too, for a satisfying college acceptance process." Oh, brother. We're getting there. We'll get there. We haven't heard from any other schools yet.
Well, we get calls every now and then.
Crazy. "It's such an exciting and momentous time that I remember incredibly fondly. Warmly, KG." And thank you, KG. As I said... That letter very succinctly says what lots and lots and lots of emails and letters and Facebook messages and so forth have said, and I so appreciate it. You guys are carrying me through this process. Mom is still in the hospital. She's had good days. She's had really bad days. And today is okay. I'm going to get a chance to talk to her later today. I heard talk to Dad, and he said, yep, she'll be around. She'll be up and available to talk to you around dinner time, and is herself today, so please call. So I will do that. And we're going to just get through this one day at a time. And I said this last week too, but I'm really grateful for the consistency that my mother has in her attitude towards death and towards life and the decisions that she's made. Yeah, the art. She was creating her art the day she went into the hospital. So, but her consistency, she has told us since we were very young that if she was ever in a situation where, you know, she had to be hooked up to a machine to breathe, or if that she was, you know, terminally ill, she did not want extreme measures taken. This was her choice. And facing cancer and being 77 years old, she, when she went into the hospital, she's just been very clear about what she's willing to do and what she's not willing to do. Mm-hmm. And there is no one in the family and no one in the hospital who can say, well, we didn't know, She really let everybody know lots and lots of times throughout my life. And going into the hospital this time, she was still very insistent on her values, and being sick and facing this didn't change that. So I'm just grateful for that. That, believe me, it makes it easier Write down a living will. You know, it's just one, just in handwriting, and you have it in an envelope and tell your family where it is. They know then, you know, what you want. And that's
Let your people know what you want.
Great comfort to the entire family that's the case. But, you know, like I said, she's sitting up today, and Dad said, call her at dinner time. So we'll call her at dinner time. Yeah. And that's good.
And speaking of Junior Dude.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a date tonight with Destiny.
With Destiny. He has tickets. He and his dad are going to go to the Tammy Duckworth, Mark Kirk debate. Last debate before the election, I believe. This is the third one that they're going to have. And I don't think that, I mean, I don't think real highly of Mark Kirk in a lot of ways, but I don't think he's going to use the word nasty woman.
No.
I think he's smarter than that.
He's in the wrong party during the wrong decade.
He is. And also, I mean, we can talk about this. He is one of those class of 2010 Republicans who got in because everybody was freaked out about Obamacare. And apparently that is still a string that can be pulled for some people, we found out this week.
Yep.
But, he doesn't have a chance, I don't think. Anyone thinks that he's going to win this election.
Oh, no, he's going to turn it around tonight, honey. 90 minutes, he'll turn it around. Right round, baby, right round. Yeah.
Yeah, I want that. I wonder if they'll have a disco ball at the debate. That would be good.
That would be awesome. I would go if they had a disco. That's the only reason I'm staying away.
Because they don't have a disco ball. Okay. But anyway, Junior Dude's very interested, as you know, in politics.
And yes, he is.
He gets extra credit in his government class for going to this, too. So
he does. So you get extra credit for
He needs extra credit in government. That's just hilarious.
But I think he's banking all these overage points and selling them to his classmates.
I think that's what he's doing, too. They do those trivia contests in class with the flashcards from the test and so forth. Yeah. And Junior Dude just really, really wants to be his own team.
Right.
Because then he can bank all of the points, extra points you get, and he doesn't have to share them with people that are getting the answers wrong.
Yeah, they're dragging me down, Mom. They're dragging me down.
So true. Anyway, we're bragging about him. Let's move on to the political podcast. There's a lot to talk about.
There is.
I was wondering if we could start with the line that you typed in.
Uh-oh.
Respectable Republicans are very upset now that they're being treated like dirty liberals.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had a lot of time.
They're being treated that way by Michelle Obama, too. That's the thing that to me is so hilarious. Today, she spoke in North Carolina with Hillary Clinton on the same stage. You know, big hug at the beginning, big hug at the end of the speech. And it really was an anointing of just like it was at the convention, that Barack Obama and Michelle Obama are anointing Hillary Clinton as their successor.
Yeah.
And the idea in the speech that Michelle Obama gave that this year, it's not about Republican versus Democrat. And I just cracked up because, and this happened at the convention too. There's only one tent for sane people.
Right.
You're welcome in. And the question then becomes, you know, what do you think you're going to get? Because apparently the House Republicans have already decided to impeach Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. We're pre-impeaching her to beat the rush. Yeah.
Right. So the idea that somehow because they're voting for Hillary in order to not vote for Trump, and then they're going to turn around and impeach her.
Yeah.
Although Jason Chaffetz, you know, is a whole nother story. And you actually had to tell me to stop swearing last night.
I did. Well, Jason Chaffetz is all teed up and ready to go to pre-impeach Hillary Clinton. Hold lots and lots of hearings day one.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Cruz is already pretty much stated that he's thinking seriously about never, ever letting another Democrat appoint anyone to the Supreme Court.
Right.
Because our party itself is illegitimate. And Jason Chaffetz also took
and that there's a historical precedent for just having eight people on the court forever.
Sure, there is, you know.
But as I said, Dirk Glass, the problem that Ted Cruz has is Hillary Clinton has 8 years in office.
Right.
And Ted Cruz is done in two more years.
Yeah, he's toast.
He's toast.
And the
even within his own party in Texas. I mean, I think
the problem with Jason Chaffetz, I just want to cut back to him.
Please get back to him because is he made me all sweary.
I don't want to make you sweary.
No, that's okay.
He unendorsed and reendorsed and unendorsed. He and many like him. You know, if the Democratic Party is the only big tent for sane people, Jason Chaffetz and scum like him are hanging out in the porta potties outside of the Trump tent. Right. They don't want to go in exactly. But they'd rather hang around the smelly little toilet where they can have their conscience and sit around and talk about how awful Hillary is than do anything. Jason Chaffetz has no business being a member of the United States government. He's already said, my goal is to break the government.
Right.
And again, our problem is that there are several thousand or tens of thousands of citizens of Utah who flunked being a citizen, who are incompetent to be a citizen of this country and keep electing scumbags like Chaffetz.
Yeah.
And give him a microphone, give him a platform and run him right out there. But it's the respectable Republicans who this is the thing. I just sort of, you know, I am occasionally tempted to call in and be hung up on not on conservative talk shows, but on the Michael Smirkanish show.
Yeah.
And just because there is such a massive omission in the reporting of what's poor and all of the who's receiving death threats. And I do believe, and I'm terribly sorry that's happening to him, but the people who are being, you know, beset on all sides by batshit crazy right-wing lunatics for being apostates and writing columns. And I don't care. The one thing that nobody talks about, I can't remember where I heard this. Probably the only place I've ever heard this is like on the Stephanie Miller show. Is where were, you know, if 33,000 emails is worth however many hearings that is and a number of ads, isn't losing 22 million emails 1,000 times worse?
Yeah. Yeah.
And if one Benghazi is worth 6 hearings, how many hearings is 10 Benghazis worth? Yeah. And I never hear any reporters say anything like that to the people who are rattling on about this.
Yeah.
And so they have enabled and pandered to and flattered. They fed the tiger, man. They fed the tiger thinking they would never fall off. They were perfectly content. Years of groveling to Rush Limbaugh.
Yep.
You know, you're an elected official and you say something mean about Rush Limbaugh and he makes you come and kiss his foot. And you do, because that's how you win elections. Michael Steele, who swears to God there was no Republican Party like this ever when he was running it. But he went to kiss the ring, someone who is in every way just like Donald Trump. And that kind of eliminationist, you know, we're going to get rid of all the liberals and keep few in a zoo just so future generations will know what they look like kind of talk. Ann Coulter calling us traitors and liars and monsters. Michael Savage, Sean Hannity, the whole hateful mob of these people were perfectly acceptable to respectable Republicans as long as they were doing their jobs, because they were the street hustlers. They were out there earning. They were out there hustling votes and money for the party and the movement. And as long as they directed their bile and hatred and death threats at liberals, well, that was okay. And then they turned on the respectable Republicans. And now they're just like, oh, my God, can you believe how mean these people are to me? They called me nasty names and insulted my children. Like, yeah, fuck yeah, I sure can.
That's who they are. Yeah,
I absolutely can. And they were that way last year, and they were that way 5 years ago, and they were that way 10 years ago, and they were that way 15 years ago. You know how I know? Because they've been shitting on liberals for a quarter of a century, doing exactly the same shit. And you never cared. You never gave a good goddamn till the fire you set came to your door. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry for your family. I really am. I'm sorry for your kids. I truly am. But you started the fire. You're the fucking arsonist. And what you could do now is go away. But you're not going to do that, are you?
Well, you used the example before of Chuck Colson.
Yeah.
That if you really are contrite about what you did during the time when you were committing all these crimes against honesty and decency, go work in prison ministry for 10 years.
Go work with the poor. Go work in prison ministries.
And come back and let us know how that went for you, because that's, you know, there are things that you can do. You know, go start a foundation for media honesty that you really mean and really mean it. I have a couple of responses to what you've said that I'd like to bring up. One is... Sure. You brought up the 22 million emails that George Bush lost and
destroyed. Yeah.
Destroyed. Yeah. And also he,
they're on a private server.
He prevented the auto archiving of those emails as well. I mean, there's all kinds of secrecy that went on. And yet when we hold up those kind of standards of, you know, but what about, I think it winds up being just a loss because we're not really having a conversation at that point. We're remembering, but we're not helping them remember. And there have been some Trump apologists this week that have tried to do this with me, and every single time it fails them because I remember and they don't. I had one say to me, just as an example, well, you know, you're making the argument that John Podesta is a private citizen. What about Karl Rove? Isn't he a private citizen? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, yeah, sure, he's a private citizen, except that time that he was the assistant chief of staff for the White House. And then he's not a private citizen. But you know what he is? He's the inviter of escort service gay men into the White House press pool. And,
yeah,
you know,
let's talk about
that. Let's talk about that while he was in office. But I don't like going down. I mean, I'm happy to push back on someone that tries to pull that on me. At the same time, somehow I don't feel like we're actually furthering our cause by pointing out, because first of all, I think Trumpists really hate Bush. So
there are no Trumpists.
And we're going to get into that next.
Yeah,
but the Trump apologists hate Bush. So, and of course, that's the other thing that happens is every time you push back and actually point out, oh, no, this is your party, but I'm an independent.
This is where you and I must respectfully disagree, because there is no way to further a conversation with an algorithm that spits out lies and then denies they said what they said and did what they did. And I was never there. You can't debate with someone who doesn't remember what they said yesterday or refuses to remember what they said yesterday or refuses to hold themselves.
Or remember how they voted in the past 8 presidential elections.
I've used this this analogy before. It's debating the, you know, guy from Memento.
Mm-hmm.
They would rather burn the country down than admit, I voted for Bush. And
Three times.
I cheered for him. Because they can't. Yeah. So now the talk you hear is the elites failed us for the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the ultimate both-siderism, isn't it?
Yep.
George Bush is just the same as Barack Obama. Just the same. There's no difference between the two. Both of them failed us. And it is the respectable Republicans, and it is the news media who have made it permissible for tens of millions of Americans to behave this way.
Well, and this is what I was trying to bring up with you last week that I kind of wasn't able to communicate well, which is if Trump was leading by 5 points, even 5 points, no one would have a problem with him in the Republican Party.
Oh, of course not.
With anything he was saying. If he was actually, you know, had a solid 269 electoral votes in his pocket, nobody would have a problem with him because tax cuts and deregulation of fossil fuels. We're going to get all that.
Obamacare. Get rid of Obamacare.
We're going to get rid of that Obamacare. But we're going to talk about the non-existence of Trumpism in a moment. Before we do that, I want to just point out that, and I think we said this last week as well, that the fact that there was no problem with Trump with a lot of these sane Republicans, so to speak, respectable Republicans, until he attacked white women.
Right.
On tape.
Yep.
And
he got caught
being disrespectful to white women. All of a sudden it's a problem.
Right.
And that is creating a narrative that I don't know if you've caught on to, but I saw it more than once last night on MSNBC. Nicole Wallace was on the 11th hour and she was on again this morning, I think on Morning Joe. And Jennifer Rubin was on All In. And both of them said something that was so similar in tone that and just words, word for word, that it really caught my ear when Nicole Wallace repeated what Jennifer Rubin said, which is, this is really having an impact on women's psyches and self-acknowledgement of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly the fact that Newt Gingrich then attacked Megyn Kelly and then unbelievably Donald Trump the next morning at his hotel applauded Newt Gingrich for attacking Megyn Kelly.
And tucked $20 in his pockets and way to go.
Nicole Wallace flat out said this was planned. She said this was orchestrated, planned, and scripted. She was just...
It was a hit job.
Absolutely. Yeah, she said Donald Trump has been at war with Megyn Kelly since the beginning of this campaign. And now, you know, this was Newt Gingrich with a script going in to attack in premeditated way Megyn Kelly. But both Nicole Wallace and Jennifer Rubin said that what has happened with this Trump campaign and the misogyny and the overt misogyny that is present in this campaign is changing the way Republican women think about themselves. And that is going to have the lasting impact after the election, that they will no longer think of themselves as Republicans because they've been just hated. And as you said to me the other night, you know, forced ultrasounds didn't matter, right?
Right.
Legitimate rape didn't matter.
Didn't matter.
Because any of these things that didn't apply to them, because...
But now
Megyn Kelly is one of them.
Right.
No, Megyn Kelly is one of
exactly.
them.
Exactly. That's my point. Yep. Now you've gone too far.
Yep.
You're being racist, attacking a Gold Star family, just shitting all over liberals, generally, calling the president, birthering the president. None of that was a bridge too far.
And the one that you pointed out to me this week that when you said it, the way you said it shocked me, which is going after active military while they are in the field of battle.
Mosul's a disaster. It's a total catastrophe. This is such a
dumb country. Generals don't know what they're doing.
It's so stupid. The military is stupid. And wow, if anyone...
Demoralizing active duty troops.
We have to remember, because the entire conservative movement is now just one long, headlong refugee flight from the past. That's all they're doing. They can't stop running away from the past long enough to notice how stupid they look. But remember, Donald Trump tweeted, "Stupid! It's a catastrophe. It's a disaster. America's a dumb country. Mosul's a freaking disaster." Okay. The Dixie Chicks said 12 mean words.
Yep.
About George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't even talk about the military. Just said we're ashamed he's from Texas. And the same wannabe Klansmen assholes who've been at the core of the Republican Party forever and who want to lie and hide because they're cowards. These people are fucking cowards. They hide from their own past. They hide from their own voting record. They hide behind women. They hide behind minorities. They hide behind children because conservatives are basically fucking cowards. They dropped a house on the Dixie Chicks when they said something trifling compared to what Donald Trump says every single fucking day.
Right.
And I've said it before, you cannot understand the right without understanding how deeply conservatives hate this country. Really, really, like, burn it down. I'd rather burn it down than live in it another fucking minute, because there's a black man in the White House, a woman in the White House, and I find those two things intolerable. And everything else, all of their issues, which aren't really issues because they're stupid and they don't make any sense, are reverse engineered rationales to explain away the fact that they're bigots and morons.
And misogynists.
But you know, but there's always a line that's too far. And once they cross it and decide to get righteous, I want liberals to be right there saying, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
5 minutes ago, you're okay with everything else this, you know, this hell beast was doing.
But I'm an independent. Both sides are really bad, you know.
Well, and again, this is why the primary target of liberal wrath, such as it is, after the election cannot be on the right.
Yeah.
Because they are unsalvageable. It has to be on the middle. It has to be on the people who purvey, who permit, who allow, who tolerate, who celebrate letting this hateful, racist idiots run wild.
Mm-hmm.
And whose entire profession is, yeah, but liberals are just as bad too. They learned this somewhere. They learned it from David Brooks. They learned it from Michael Gerson. They learned it from Kathleen Parker. All the people who are now just horrified that their party has been taken over suddenly overnight by these people are the same people who taught them how to lie and how to get away with it. And what to say if you get caught. And, you know, there's a picture of Earth from Saturn. I don't know if you've seen this.
No.
It's just a little fleck of light.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't see our ice caps or oceans or continents or anything. It's just, you know, a little fleck of light. And I look at, frankly, at this point, everyone from Nicole Wallace to Glenn Beck to Rush Limbaugh, to Donald Trump and say, fuck y'all.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
this is your disaster.
Yep.
Yours. You created this. I don't see any distinctions. I don't see any oceans. I don't see any continents. I don't mm-hmm. see any borders between any of you people. Mm-hmm. You're all horrible people. You're all people who took money and power and perks and privilege to enable the worst political disaster in modern
right.
memory.
Right.
And now you're just, well, fine. If you believe that Nicole Wallace, quit your fucking job on TV, which is pretty much your only skill set, and go away.
Or publicly change parties.
Right.
And when someone says WikiLeaks, you say Russia.
Russia. And Steve
Schmidt. And if you're willing to do that, if you're willing to say, not only was I wrong, but here is the course correction. I'm going to show you every single day the course correction. Now, of course, she'll get kicked off of television when she does that.
And there's the thing. And Steve Schmidt, Steve Schmidt opens his, or I don't even want to talk about Rick Wilson, who, you know, was an enabler of this stuff for years, right up until it became profitable to go against it. Because he doesn't have a compass or a soul or a conscience. He just has, you know, a nose for money.
Yeah.
And he will find the dollar in every deal. But when Steve Schmidt is asked a question about the conservatives are, and it says, you should really go talk to Digby.
Then
I'll start listening to anything you have to say. But until I start hearing a whole lot more conservatives say, you know what? Maybe I'm not the person to be asking this. I'm looking over my shoulder right now. Who do I see on TV but David Frum? Maybe when David Frum says, look, you know, I'm not the guy to talk to. I was part of the mafia. I fucked this whole thing up. I came to Jesus 10 minutes ago. And I'm still have one foot in both camps because I don't know which way it's going to break. And Frum got to eat, man. Frum got to get paid. Seeing people like that saying, you know what you should do? You should go talk to a bunch of liberals. Go talk to some liberals. Go talk to people who were right about this all along and don't talk to me. But that's not going to happen. You know that little podcast we played of Norm Ornstein?
Yes, yes.
You want to talk about that for a minute?
Well, it was an alert listener who sent that to us.
Yes, indeed.
And Norm Ornstein was on, and I'm sorry, I don't know which podcast it was.
We'll find it.
We'll link to it on our...
Yeah, we're a little
fried right now with all the sickness in our family and everything. But he was basically telling the story of how he was blackballed from the Sunday shows.
Yes.
For saying, this is a Republican problem.
Right. And not even him, but the note, what he was talking about. And this is the part where I go, you know, deductive reasoning is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Because... from our little perch here in the middle of the Midwest, in the middle of a cornfield with no resources but basically a microphone and Google and some Wi-Fi, we have deduced the state of the media to such a degree that we were unsurprised by anything.
Yep, like, we can predict. We can predict what's going to be said. Yeah.
And so he said, look, we've been you know, straight shooters right down the middle, boring old policy guys. We were, you know, well respected by everyone in the media. We were on a lot of shows. It was never an issue. And then we finally came to this parting of the ways where we said, you know, there's this horrid thing happening on the right.
And he said, we knew we were going to lose some friends from this. We knew we were going to lose some friends. We knew we were going to lose some contacts. But it was so clear, the evidence was so clear that the Republican Party was becoming an outlier when it comes to compromise, when it comes to governing.
An outlier, yeah.
Right, right. And we had to say something. And he said that a lot of former congressmen and former senators and former office holders said to him, off the record, thank you, because my party is lost now. It really is lost.
And it became the talk of the town. He
that
said
was the thing. He said, we published it on Friday, and all evening Friday and all day Saturday, I was getting email after email, and people on chat rooms were talking about it, and everyone that I knew was talking about it.
And it got like a million comments or likes.
A million comments,
It was
linked everywhere.
It was the most talked about thing they had ever written.
Right, right.
And he said, look,
36 hours later, Sunday shows had nothing.
And here's the Sunday shows. He said, and the Sunday shows are supposed to be, what are people talking about in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah.
What's
the
skinny? What's the poop? What's going on? He said, you don't even have to put me on or Thomas Mann on. But what we're talking about is the topic of conversation in every bar and among everyone you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, radio silence.
Yeah.
Not a word. We're not going to talk about it. And he says it's been pretty much that way ever since.
Ever since, yep.
Someone mentioned it once in passing.
David Korn mentioned it.
Yes, David Korn mentioned it, and he was laughed at.
Yep.
and Peggy Noonan.
By Peggy Noonan.
Looked up from her, you know, vat of gin long enough to say, oh, you're an idiot. And go back, and she passed out back in her drink. Mm-hmm. But that's it. And it is both incredibly depressing and extremely satisfying to have someone who's smack in the middle of this come back to us down who aren't on the mountain and say, look, you know what? You got it completely right. Yeah. It is broken. It is one party. It is a disaster. The people in that party are fucking crazy. Everyone knows it. Everyone that corrupt city over there goddamn well knows it, and they will not talk about it.
Yeah.
And then the story becomes, why won't they talk about it?
Yeah. Well, and it's
that's where liberals need to focus their fire post election.
Yep.
Because we can see this is something that we share with Chris Hayes, what I have dubbed Operation Memory Hole.
Yeah.
Which is you can watch the many different ways in which all of the people who have been the problem all along are now gearing up to pretend that this never happened or it's an outlier and there's nothing really wrong with the Republican Party or the base, or it really was both sides. You know, you have Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump and you have both parties are broken and corrupt and it's awful. But you can just see them doing this. You can see them starting up the engine, getting that big old hole ready, because come November 9th or 10th or 12th or over the Thanksgiving holiday, all this shit's going to get bulldozed into a big old hole. They're going to pour 12 feet of Chernobyl concrete over it. And we're going to go back to talking about why Hillary has no mandate.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it a shame that both sides are so polarized? And why can't people get along?
And this coming from the people who said Barack Obama doesn't lead,
right.
That's the problem, right? Well, you and I both wrote a post this week about the video that I pulled up from Morning Joe a couple of days ago, where Willie Geist was asking everyone who came on the show, you know, we're calling it Trumpism. Right. Is it a permanent feature of the Republican Party, or will it be over after the election? And again, this was something that you and I have predicted since Valentine's Day, right?
Since Trump came down the escalator.
Seriously.
Practically, yeah.
Yeah, that once he failed,
yes.
That they would say, this is just an anomaly. It's not the real Republican Party. It's Trumpism. It doesn't really exist. And down the memory hole it goes. And so the post that I wrote just had three points to it. One is, mighty white of you.
Yeah.
Because you'll notice that on Morning Joe, Joanne Reed was not 50 miles from that set.
No.
There was no way that any African-American who has dealt with racism and bigotry in the Republican Party and observed it would let anyone say that this is an anomaly in the Republican Party.
Of course not. No.
The problem is not Trumpism. The problem is the Republican Party is chocked full of Trump voters.
Right.
Who love him.
And they're called Republicans.
Yeah. And they are primarily motivated by being white, and they want a white America. That's what great means. That's what great again means. It means going white again.
Mm-hmm.
White supremacy. And then the second thing was both-siderism.
Uh-huh.
And you and I said, both sides doesn't work on the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
No.
You cannot be on both sides. But,
no.
But the Republican establishment believes that you can.
Sure.
And they believe that during the primary season, you can stand with the white sheriff and beat up the black guy. And then you cross over.
Right.
During the convention, you cross over and you're on the moderate side of the Edmund Pettus Bridge. And you really believe in America and you want to have a kinder, gentler Trump. And this is how Trump got away with this. This is how he got the nomination is the Republican establishment said, you know, Ryan Spreeva said, fine, he'll pivot. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. He's got to be bigoted now. He's got to get the primary vote now.
Yeah, sure.
You know, but in the general election, we'll tone it all down.
Uh-huh.
And that never happened.
Etch a sketch.
I think the reason it didn't happen was not so much that Trump had any philosophy in his wheelhouse that he cared about. It or even cared about winning.
No.
That it really was about Trump would not be bothered to take advice from anybody or do any work to figure out that he had to pivot. He just was, he likes crowds. He likes getting cheered. So he's going to do exactly what he's been doing all through the primaries. Right. And it was just laziness on his part.
Well, and the thing that they were hiding from when Romney was running.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The Etch-a-Sketch comment that took Romney down.
Right.
Thank you, John Fugel, saying.
Yeah.
Turned out to be 4 years later. The strategy that Reince Priebus was writing on cardboard the size of the side of a barn, waving in the air, going, "Please, for God's sakes, Etch-a-Sketch, pivot now."
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's how far down, that's how debased, that's what human footstools Trump has reduced these people to, and that's in their nature.
Mm-hmm.
It is in their nature. It is Michael Steele's nature to be someone else's boot scraper. It is Reince Priebus' nature to be someone else's footstool.
I meant to tell you that last night on the 11th hour, Michael Steele was on with Nicole Wallace, as she said, Republican women are going to abandon the Republican Party.
Yes.
And then Brian Williams said, and let's bring on Michael Steele,
right,
former chairman of the Republican National Committee.
Right.
And Michael Steele said, "Oh, Brian, that was a lifetime ago.
That was a lie. This nothing to do with me, man. I'm Bennett, and I'm not in it.
Right.
You know, no, sorry,
right,
man. This is part of the process. This is why we all know that, however horrifying Newt Gingrich's behavior was, he'll be back on television. He'll be
exactly.
back as a respectable member of the
yep.
of the establishment
yep.
within, you know, a month or 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Because
talking about Hillary Clinton and what a monster she
yeah,
is, right?
That's
yeah.
how they go.
Yeah.
That's how they
yeah.
roll. I mean, I have codified this. I call it the Gingrich rules, and you can yeah. look it up on my blog. And I've written about it, you know, dozens of times.
Dozens of times, yeah.
It is a cycle with people like this, where they go wildly off script because that's what their scam of the moment requires. They have to talk about the Ground Zero Mosque, or they have to talk about Barack Obama's Kenyan anti-colonial blah, blah, blah. They have to do something horribly racist to make the mob happy.
Yeah.
And then they have to sit in the penalty box for 30 days, maybe a little bit longer, a full Halperin, as is known in the business. And then usually it was David Gregory, or now it's Chuck Todd, or it's George Stephanopoulos, has them back on to a respectable Sunday show, and they never mention it.
Yep.
And that person just goes back to being a respected, serious member of the political establishment. And that's how they operate. And until that machine is broken, until we start having panel discussions at our blogger ethics panels or meetups about why does Jeff Zucker let this happen?
That's my third point.
Les Moonves get away with saying, yeah, sure, Trump is a disaster for democracy, but he's great for our bottom line?
Well,
how
CNN made $100 million more because of Trump, right? So, and this was the third point that I made in my post about Trumpism, which is the Beltway Media and the cable news doesn't work for Trump voters, doesn't work for liberals, doesn't work for audience share. They work for the advertising department of Big Pharma.
Yeah.
That's who they work for. Morning Joe is not about making sure that even the Wall Street bankers in Manhattan are happy. I know we've said that that's who their audience is, but they are really interested in pleasing those who sell moderate to severe plaque psoriasis medication.
Yeah. Yeah. Dick pills and reverse mortgages. Yeah.
Right, right, right. So, Tom Brokaw this week said that the real problem post-election is going to be how do we sew the country back together.
How do we sew the country? You know, this is going to be a continuous problem. As long as this is a polarized nation, as long as I only own 70% of Wyoming, we can never be a united country. And he just falls asleep because, you know, he's just scripted. Everyone's turning into David Broder before my very eyes. You
they
know,
are.
Doddering,
right?
Old...
It's the aging boomer newsman mentality.
Should have been retired long ago, but you got to wheel them out every few years and to lend.
Well, they're the senior wisdom. You know, that's what it is. It's the senior newsman.
Well,
but
no, it's
what I said, Driftglass, was that you're not going to be able to sew the Confederate flag onto the fabric of America as it is today.
No.
Those two don't go together. And that's something that, again, Tom Brokaw and Jeff Zucker and the news media that needs to sell penis pills wants to say.
Yeah.
We're kind of running out of time.
Oh no.
I want to make sure I get to this Wall Street Journal article real quick. Junior Dude. Everybody knows he's David Junior. I'm just going to say Junior Dude. That's what we call him.
Junior Dude.
Has been bringing home the Wall Street Journal this week, I think from his newspaper.
And we have been lecturing him about bringing that filth into our house.
Yeah, that filth into our house. What the hell?
You have a room full of, who owns this newspaper, don't you? You have a room full of Playboys and you bring that crap into my house?
Exactly.
What's wrong with you?
You have every back issue of the Victoria's Secret catalog up in your room. You don't need to read this shit. But I read it
for the articles, Mom.
I read the Wall Street Journal for the articles, Mom. Oh, my God. I've lost my son. Yes. Okay. He left this one in the car, and something caught my eye. I wanted to make sure that I said this was podcastable. It's in the money and investing section for Monday, and it said, a growing number of investors and policymakers seeing central banks as powerless to revive an anemic global economy are championing a resurgence of fiscal spending.
On what, honey? Like infrastructure projects and such?
Yeah. For several years, governments have feared incurring more debt. Instead, they have left it to central banks to lower the cost of borrowing and thus encourage households and businesses to spend. That hyperactive monetary policy has pushed up prices of assets, including bonds, but there is growing evidence that central bank policy is underwhelming. Households and businesses haven't gone on a spending binge.
Because they
don't have jobs.
We tried, believe me. I've looked through all the sofa cushions I could find at this house. And
I just find it really amusing that all of a sudden the pressure for government spending... it's not going to come from unions. It's not going to come from liberals.
We're going to say
the bond market and the central banks want stimulus.
Yeah.
So they're going to get it.
Yeah.
And an economy that has concentrated wealth at the top at some point reaches saturation.
Yeah.
And you can't make any more money because it's all gone.
Right. It's all packed in and there's no place else to put it.
Yeah.
And you know what? Oh, sure. Now that we have the blessing of the central banks, let's do what liberals have been begging to do for 30 years, which is
even just closer to 2010.
Yeah.
Barack Obama saying, fix this bridge.
Well, Bill Clinton ran on this. Bill Clinton ran on pretty much the same platform in terms of infrastructure, education, healthcare. A much lighter version because he was busy triangulating away a lot of our values. Mm-hmm. But it was always Republicans run up giant deficits and then dump it on the Democrats and say, you're going to have to cut everything that we don't like. Neener, 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 neener. Mm-hmm. And then Democrats clean up their mess just in time for Republicans to win again, run up more deficits and then turn around and say, and during the interim, of course, during the time when Republicans are actually running up deficits, all the deficit hawks are strangely silent.
Yeah.
All of those Republicans who saying, oh, my God, I got to take my country back. And by the way, deficits are bad. Never gave a shit about deficits when George Bush was running about. Never said a fucking word about deficits. So it is, again, my view from space is the entire conservative movement is rotten from top to bottom. And I don't need to listen to anything anyone on the right says other than in terms of listening to the domestic enemy that is trying to wreck my country and trying to figure out what their secret agenda is. Mm-hmm. You know, Steve Schmidt might very well get weepy over the fact that his party has become a fascist, but Steve Schmidt wants to go back to work doing what Steve Schmidt does.
Mm-hmm.
None of these people want to sacrifice a dollar or a parking space or one iota of the privilege they have as being the media gatekeepers over principle. That's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our job. Our job.
It's going to be interesting to see how particularly women respond to this overall, especially in the midterms. Is this going to be now a permanent change where women across the political spectrum and across the marriage spectrum and across the income spectrum reject Republicanism because of the misogyny of the Trump campaign?
Lysistrata, baby.
Lysistrata. I think if that really does turn out to be a change, the Republican Party is in for it.
Yeah.
And at some point, then the people who reject that publicly, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I have heard John Kasich's name mentioned by the Beltway media
yes.
this week as being the brave one, right?
If only Kasich had.
Yeah, and Kasich did not generate the excitement, right, during the primaries. Right. That was not what was going on.
Kasich
but now
couldn't.
He's the strong, principled one because he's going to attract Republican women back into the party.
Ladies.
Please, it's John Kasich. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get quickly to, first of all, let's congratulate our president.
Yes.
Who is campaigning way down ticket.
I saw him, I swear, like campaigning for alderman in Springfield just last week. He was like, you know, Joey Jojo Jr. make a great alderman. And you know what else he's not? He's not Donald Trump, because Donald Trump sucks ass. And thanks, Mr. President. And he just flies into small towns like I don't know, the Shadow or Batman.
Or a community organizer.
Right. He just comes in under the cover of presidency. Well, what's that? That just sounds like Air Force One. I can't possibly be. There's no airport big enough to land. And then suddenly he's there. He shows up and starts, you know, campaigning for local assessor, water reclamation district guy,
yeah.
mosquito abatement fella.
Well, wasn't it Chris Matthews who said, you know, no one's ever done this before. I'm like, the Koch brothers have done it
right.
before.
That's the point.
That, duh.
And Barack Obama, first of all, I just want to say Barack Obama, I'm taking one issue, and not with him, but with Brian Boutler,
mm-hmm.
Who I was reading this article at the same time Chris Hayes started talking about it. So it was a very exciting convergence of sort of stereophonic, oh, goodness gracious. But this was in the New Republic, and it was about Barack Obama just swinging on these people now and talking in the language, and this is not anywhere in the article, and that's my point, speaking in the language of the vituperative, foul-mouthed bloggers of the left.
Yeah.
And Brian Boutler pointing out that there are all these Republican strategists who are furious or freaked out because Barack Obama is the one who understands their party better than they do.
Yeah.
Because they're not allowed to talk about the fact that daddy's a drunk and mommy's a drug addict. Mm-hmm. We can't talk mm-hmm. about that. Let's have pancakes. Barack Obama's the guy who shows up and goes, this family's pretty fucked up. Have you noticed that? But the problem I had with the article was the title. Obama was right about Republican extremism all along. No, he wasn't.
He absolutely wasn't. In 2009, he wasn't.
In 2010, I pulled up a 2010
article. He was having article. David Brooks over for coffee thinking that, yeah.
In 2010, I pulled up an article. It basically, Paul Krugman and me were writing you've got to stop catering to these people. You got to stop coddling them. Please stop pretending they're reasonable, and please stop throwing our values under the bus to try to accommodate people who are evil, who are bad, who want to.
And you kept saying he thinks they're Republicans in Springfield.
Right.
He thinks they're downstate farm Republicans that you can play a game of cards with on the train and then come up with a deal. And I think maybe Bruce Rauner convinced Barack Obama that the Republican Party had changed. I hadn't thought of that before.
Yeah.
But, you know, Bruce Rauner came in and just bought the Republican Party in Illinois and started not having budgets for months and months and months and months and months. So
Over a year now.
Yeah. So no state budget for over a year. So, you know, this Republican Party that doesn't compromise and will never give you anything, including a Supreme Court nomination.
Who are pre-impeaching Hillary. And again,
pre-impeaching Hillary. Yeah.
That's the party that Barack Obama, since they're not going to do anything anyway, since there's no legislation to pass because they're too busy, you know.
I got nothing but time.
He's spending that time doing down ticket, really far down ticket retail politics, saying basically, please don't elect anyone to empower this fucked up party until this fucked up party is burned to the ground and replaced with something sane, which we could all applaud. Nothing would make Barack Obama happy.
A two-party system. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Nothing would make him happier. Me, I'd be thrilled if there was a Republican Party full of grown-ups who have
willing to say, all right, we understand that Obamacare is a thing that exists and that people need insurance. And we have ideas on how to, I mean, this is Romney, right? Romney did this.
Yeah.
Romney said people need insurance and we need a reliable way of delivering health care to people. So we're going to rein in hospital costs. We're going to, you know, Massachusetts did this and people like their insurance.
Right.
They like it. And that doesn't mean there aren't problems, but then you tweak that. And that's where the push me, pull you of, we don't want too much government, and we want to rein in spending government. We would not like to have it all be funded by the government. We'd like other private interested, whatever that sort of Eisenhower argument is.
Yeah.
You know, that brings about better legislation.
It does. That's where
it really does.
Yeah. That's when Dan Rostenkowski, you know, goes golfing and goes out for drinks with, you know, whoever the Republican counterpart is, and they cut a deal. It's the way politics used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
it was never pretty, but it was always much more effective and much more in line with what the founders of the country had in mind, which is why you have grown-ups contending over policy, using the same sets of facts, trying to figure out what's in the best interests of the people that elected them. But right. When one of those two parties is full of crazy people who believe that Barack Obama wasn't born here and Michelle Obama's a man and they stole their children and are raising them secretly at the White House, you can't have government at all, because you keep trying to include people who are trying to burn down set fire to the negotiating table rather than sit around it and come to terms. And all I'll say this week is, this week David Brooks returned to his factory default settings.
Mm-hmm.
That's my 30 seconds on David Brooks has gone back to what he knows best, which is blaming both sides, talking about how, you know, right after the election, we can return to governing.
And have Whigs be the heroes of the story. Yeah. There's a very long article by George Packer in The New Yorker, and it's about Hillary Clinton and the populist revolt. Most of the article is about Hillary Clinton and finding ways to reach white middle class America, white working class America, with an economic message, and her real desire to do that. But there was this one segment about Black Lives Matter that I wanted to bring up. First of all, it's amazing to me, and I'm excited that Black Lives Matter has been acknowledged by the Hillary Clinton campaign. The We Are Democrats ad has Black Lives Matter in it.
Uh-huh. And Jimmy Carter, by the way. So
Mr. McKeeson, who is from Baltimore and is a leader in the Black Lives Matter movement, endorsed Hillary Clinton yesterday and talked about it last night as being a really clear-eyed, practical policy decision on his part to do this, that he is going to hold her accountable for what she's promised to do, and that he is endorsing her because her policies, the policies that she has discussed with him, are attainable and reasonable and can be done. And he wants to see these policies get through.
Uh-huh.
So to me, this is just such a wonderful learning curve for everyone to see how this is unfolding. And to see the Democratic Party stand up for Black Lives Matter. I think that is so important, given the smear that has been put on that movement as being some sort of anti-police terrorist movement, mm-hmm. which it is not. But at any rate, in this article by George Packer, these paragraphs appear. Last August, Black Lives Matter activists met with Hillary Clinton backstage at a town hall on drug abuse in New Hampshire. This is 2015. In a rare moment of candor and passion, Clinton made the case for pragmatism and, above all, legislation. As a camera filmed the exchange, one activist, Julius Jones, spoke of the, quote, anti-blackness current that is America's first drug, adding, America's first drug is free black labor and turning black bodies into profit. Jones told Clinton that America's fundamental problems can't be solved until someone in her position tells white Americans the truth about the country's founding sins. The Black Lives Matter activists wanted Clinton to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, there has to be a reckoning. I agree with that. But I also think there has to be some positive vision and plan that you can move people toward. And she asked Black Lives Matter, these activists, at this meeting in New Hampshire, for a policy agenda. Give me something I can take to Congress and pass.
Uh-huh.
And Jones, this man, didn't buy it. He said, if you don't tell black people what we need to do for you, then we won't tell you all what you need to do. And this was the critical line. She said, I'm not telling you, Clinton said. I'm just telling you to tell me. You tell me what to do. And Jones replied, what I mean to say is this, and has always has been a white problem of violence. There's not much we can do to stop violence against us. In other words, you white people need to fix the problem of being so anti-black.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they wanted an apology from a white leader.
Right.
And as the conversation ended, Clinton said, yeah, well, respectfully, if that's your position, then I will talk only to white people about how we're going to fix these very real problems. I don't believe, this is the part that is so, that just made, opened up worlds for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe you change hearts. I believe you change laws. You change allocation of resources. You change the way systems operate. You're not going to change every heart.
Nope. No, you are not.
And when I read that, I went, aha, that is how Hillary Clinton stays sane.
That's how she thinks.
Well, but it's also how she stays sane
right.
in the process of everyone hating her.
Right. But this is how she
thinks.
I'm
not going to make everyone love me.
She thinks like a policy person.
She does. She does.
She thinks like, yeah. Look, no, but no law passed has ever changed a human heart.
Right.
But you can change behavior. You can change the way people are compelled to act or not act to each other. You can make people behave respectfully to each other. That you can enact as a matter of policy, a matter of law.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way she thinks. And, you know, there's a heart there. You know,
yeah.
you should enact those laws. You should build that legislation around your values and the direction you want to take people, you know, what you want to make them into. But it is a very practical – this is what I took away from that conversation. This was someone's mom
mm-hmm.
talking to their adult son or daughter.
Yeah.
Saying, yep. Look, I get that you're very angry and you have mm-hmm. every reason to be angry, but anger doesn't get you anywhere.
Right.
What you need
right.
to do, what you need to help me do is to find a way to help create the world that I want us all to live in.
Right.
And
right.
and then and you know what Black Lives Matter did? They went out and got a 10-point plan.
They did.
They went out
they
and thought about it.
They have a 10-point plan that includes body cameras for police officers
yeah.
and get rid of the military equipment, you know, the tanks, stop building up these anti-riot forces all the time
yeah.
and presenting that as your police force.
And civilian review
yeah.
boards. And
civilian review
yeah.
boards and very specific points of light that mm-hmm. can be put into legislation. And a lot of them have been.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of police departments have said, yeah, this is going to save our insurance costs. You know, it's going to lower our insurance costs because we won't be in these situations.
Well, and I liken it to the Civil Rights Act.
Well, that she did too.
Which
is. She did too, yeah.
Well, and very specifically because you had all of these states operating under consent decrees
that forced them
against their will to let people vote that they didn't want to let vote.
Right.
The minute they lifted the consent decree, those states went right back to voter suppression.
And they were just waiting for it.
And
yep.
I think in the case of, was it North Carolina? They were very specific. They said they did a study to find out what kind of voting efforts are most effective and most utilized by minorities, and let's ban those.
Yep.
They were real explicit about that. That couldn't be clearer. You can't get these people to stop being racists, but you can force them by law to treat people respectfully, even though they have to do it through clenched teeth.
Yep.
And that's the best
and
you can
tough
have.
Shit.
Yeah.
And tough shit, you have to do it through clenched teeth. Sure, you can have a Confederate flag on the back of your truck. You can't have one on the top of the state house.
Right.
You're not allowed. Tough shit. And that's how that's the name of our podcast, the Tough Shit Podcast. And I think we're going to have to, I think Hillary Clinton is going to have to do some tough shit stuff with the Jason Chaffetzes of
I'm
the Congress.
Hoping. I'm hoping that one of the things that Barack Obama leaves for, in addition to a letter, a transition,
I know what
is his empty bag of fucks.
His big empty bag of fucks.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm all out.
All the fucks were all used up by Barack Obama, and there are none left. So how about the next time you subpoena me, I tell you to go pee up a rope? How about that? Wouldn't that be fun? Let's take it to the Supreme Court. Oh, wait a minute. We can't take it to the Supreme Court because you won't let me appoint Supreme Court justices.
Right.
Hey, let's take that to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you win the Senate, I think it's time for an awful lot of Senate select committees on the sedition of the Republican Party.
Yep.
I would
like
to see Jason Chaffetz's email. Thank you very much.
I would like to see Tom Cotton's email.
I would love to see them.
Absolutely.
I would love to see those emails, you know, gutted and spread all over the floor so we can look at all the horse porn.
I want them to call Donald Trump into a hearing for Trump and Fuhrer summer.
Yeah.
Trumpergate summer. Come on, Donald, sit down for a live hearing and tell us how the Republican Party treated
you. And honestly, I don't want this to be retributive, although part of me really does.
Oh, sure.
I would just like the Jason Chaffetzes of this country to be driven back into the political sewer so that grownups and the people who vote for him to be utterly demoralized and discouraged and scuttle away back under the rocks so the grownups can run the country again.
Yeah.
But we can't govern as long as one of our parties is dedicated to the act of destroying governance. It cannot work.
Right.
Anyway, that's all I have to say this week, other than David Brooks has returned to his factory default settings.
Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Ivan Buttertoes.
Oh, man.
Ivan definitely lives a life of adventure. His hobbies include yodeling, finger knitting, blogging, and he also classifies himself as a connoisseur. I think he's an entrepreneur as well.
Yeah.
You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you, and thank you again for all of your support of me emotionally and us financially. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, and we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. We had to write a check this week for Junior Dude's cap and gown, and I was able to do that because we had Amazon money in the bank. So
yeah,
I appreciate that. Yeah. So your Amazon purchases paid for the cap and gown rental.
We were just going to go with a shower curtain and a...
You told me to knit him a cap and gown, Ron Weasley style.
A Ron Weasley. A clipboard or one of those little drop tiles from our old kitchen. But... No,
we didn't have to do that.
No, we're going to get him an actual cap and gown, thanks to our listeners.
Yes, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are now made men in the Mormon Mafia.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2016, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.